Hello, this is Paul Sollentrop of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. You are listening to the Roundhouse Podcast. Thank you very much for your time. We have John Wise with us. John is the Assistant Director of Track and Field and Cross Country. He joins the podcast to preview the American Athletic Conference Indoor Championships. It begins Friday in Birmingham, Alabama. This will be the first American indoor meet since 2020. So, John, set the scene for us. Describe the Crossplex in Birmingham. It's hosted NCAA championships. It's going to host again in March for the indoor, so you may have some athletes heading back there. Just a fabulous facility from what I understand. What's it like?
Yeah, it's a community facility, so it's run by the city of Birmingham. There's a few of these kind of places around the country, and they can see the value of building a complex like that to get hotels and restaurants involved in the economic impact to a city that a big championship has. And actually, we're the fourth championship this week that's coming in. So there's 2 days in a row for four different conferences, Division I conferences coming in. So obviously, really nice facility. And it's been, since we go there every year, except for last year, you kind of get used to it. It's like when we were in the Missouri Valley, we went to Northern Iowa every year. And even though that was an opponent's facility, because we went every year, it almost felt like a home meet. You know, you got used to, you know where the hotels were, you know where the restaurants are, you go to the same place every year, it kind of helps. So it's a really nice facility. You mentioned the NCAA championships being there. So some of the, you know, top athletes in the world will end up being there, and they do a good job running off the meets. And so we're always excited to go down. It's a little bit of a zoo, because literally a meet is finishing and we're rolling in to try to practice right after that. And it's kind of a zoo for a period of time when meets are finishing and we're starting. So, but we kind of prepared our team, and we've done it enough now to know how to get ready for the meet.
It features a banked track. What's the significance of that?
So the national meet is always on a banked track in Division I. And it helps you run faster compared to a flat track like we have in the Heskett Center. And it's just, that's kind of the universal international standard, is a 200 meter bank track. You see some more tracks now that are like 300 meters. So a bigger, you know, that's called an oversized track. And but the championships have been generally run on bank tracks. So we actually put together our meet schedule this year almost exclusively to run on bank tracks this year. We went to Nebraska. We went to Washburn a couple times. We went to Arkansas this past week. Our only other meets were at home. We went to KU, which is the only other flat track. So I think we're pretty well prepared to go and compete on it.
How many seconds? What's the difference? What do you pick up on a hydraulic track?
So, for instance, in like the 200-meter dash, the difference is much smaller. It's about 3 or 4 tenths of a second is what maybe half a second is the conversion. But when you get out to, you know, the mile, the 3K, it's multiple seconds. You know, kind of depend. There's a conversion for it. So I think in the mile it's 2 or 3 seconds, and in the 3K it's more like 5 or 6 seconds.
So if you want to set records or qualify, this is the kind of atmosphere that can really help?
Yeah, for sure. They do have conversions. So like if you run an R track, let's say we run the 200-meter dash, you run 22.0. It's worth like 21.7 on a bank track. So there's a conversion factor. So you can still qualify on a flat track. But the way we do our record keeping, we don't give somebody credit for a converted time. So you're definitely going to run faster on a bank track or an oversized track than on a flat track.
All right, let's start with the women. Houston, they are the two-time defending champion. Shockers finished third in 2019. They finished fifth in 2020. And then, of course, COVID canceled it a year ago. Strongest areas for the Shockers on the women's side?
We're, like usual, we're pretty balanced. And so, you know, we're excited, you know, to go see how we do. We're certainly a little younger right now. A lot of these girls that we're taking have not competed in a conference championship indoor. So they obviously may have done last year's outdoor. As you're looking at the league, you know, we have good multi-eventers, but, you know, one of them is a true freshman, one of them is a redshirt freshman. And then there's one that's a junior that's our top three girls. They should do well. Destiny Masters is one of those girls, and she's also a really good high jumper. And so that's a girl, but she's never competed in an indoor championship before, as an example. So we feel good. We always have strong multi-events. So we hope those girls can rally up and score. We know Yasmin is running well, Yasmin Wright, in the distance races. I think we're still trying to figure out exactly what events she's going to do. She's got three different options. She's got the 800, the mile, and the 3,000 meters. And I know they're strategizing to figure out what's the best place, you know, what are other teams going to do, and where can we maximize our points. So we feel like Yasmin is going to be a strong athlete. Paola Garcia is ranked first in the conference in the 200. She sprained her ankle at one of our meets, and so we're not sure if she's going to run or not. So that's kind of that'll hurt us in a couple spots. So we'll have to have some other girls step up. Faith Turner could be one of those girls who's one of those, again, kind of like Destiny, kind of, you know, second year freshman that's running really well, almost broke our school record in the 60 meter dash and is a really good jumper. But then just recently, Amanda Kukulius has really, really come on strong in the shot put. She broke our school record this week, threw 52 feet. First girl ever in school history indoors to throw 52 feet. And so she's rounding into form at the right time. So we got a lot of different places. I just mentioned almost every event area there that we have a good athlete. And so that's what we do. We're kind of try to come at it from different events all around the track and field. And hopefully if our girls step up, we do well. It looks like Central Florida on paper would be a favorite. They've gotten really good in the last couple of years. And then I think after that, it could be anywhere, you know, we could fall anywhere in there. So it really depends on how well we compete at the meet.
So Destiny Masters is a freshman from El Dorado. She ranks first in the American, 3,898 points in the pentathlon. So as a freshman making their first appearance in an event like that, how do you go about helping prepare them for the atmosphere?
You know, for her, she is just one where it's just you're wanting to help her be confident. And we often say, if you do what you did to get there, then you'll do really well. So it's, you don't have to go and do something special. Just keep doing what you've been doing. And a lot of times they do something special, but it's just because they're physically peaked and they're ready to go. But mentally, you just want to, not that you want to treat it like any other meet, but not to make too much out of a championship meet. And not to look at where she's ranked in the conference or, you know, where she's at the national list or anything like that. Just, hey, just show up on Friday morning and start that meet and get things rolling. And for her, as a young athlete, she can have success in her first event at the multi. That'll just get the ball rolling, you know. And if it doesn't go well the first event, then that it could go the other way. So you really just want to help her get started and be confident. And I think Coach Rainbolt, you know, he works with her and he does a great job of doing that. So we expect that she'll go and compete really hard and score a bunch of points for us.
Why has she been able to get rolling so quickly in her college career and all these different events?
It's so she did redshirt her first year, but she graduated high school a year early. And so she was young, so she needed a redshirt year there. And she was not heavily recruited. She's one of these, you know, Wichita State multis that weren't heavily recruited. And her athleticism just started blossoming before our eyes. So all of a sudden it's like, wow, she's doing some things that are remarkably different than what we thought she was as a 17-year-old high school girl. And so she's just athletically gotten things together. She's maturing mentally and physically all at the same time and just learning the events. It just takes some time. And for her, I think that she's just kind of starting to figure it out. You know, she's ahead of pace. If you look at some of the great multi girls we had, like Nikki Larch Miller and Brianne Borman and Gavin Yetter, like she's ahead of their pace early in the career. Doesn't mean she'll finish where they did, because they really obviously had great careers. But I think she's maybe more athletic than some of those girls. And so that's exciting to think about. She does have some aches and pains pretty consistently, but I think that's pretty common for multi-eventers that are always dealing with a little bit of an ankle, you know, or a knee or something like that. And so she has battled through those and had a good indoor season. She's missed a meet or two more out of caution. But we're excited to see how the championship goes for Destiny, for sure.
So to put that in perspective, you mentioned Brianne Borman. She holds a school record, 4,133 points in the pentathlon. So definitely a good start for
Destiny. Yeah, Destiny's almost 3,900 already as a redshirt freshman. So she's, she could score 4,000 points this weekend if she has a good meet. And she's also ranked number one in the high jump. She doesn't have an ankle soreness, so that we'll have to see how she's feeling. But I know that if she feels good, she'll be a she can win if she just is feeling good. So she's a really good, talented athlete that's just scratching the surface, I think.
Is there a secret weapon on the women's team, somebody who might, you know, come from far down in the depth chart and maybe surprise and help score some points?
I think we mentioned Faith Turner. She's ranked ninth in the long jump. And she's, I think, seventh in the 60, and she's also a really good triple jumper, but she had a quad injury that's kept her out of some meets, but she competed at Washburn a couple weeks ago, ran a PR in the 60, jumped a PR in a long jump and limited her jumps. Didn't take all the jumps because we're just trying to keep her healthy. She's a girl that could jump 20 feet in a long jump and get second, all of a sudden, or get top three in the 60 meter dash, you know? And so, she's just right around the scoring. She's down for 2 points. She could score 12 points, you know, and, she could also be a little off and not score any points. So it's the jumps and the sprints are very competitive in the AAC. And so there's a very fine line of, you know, being in the top three or not even scoring. And, but she's a really confident girl and, she's going to be a good one for the coming years. So I think, she's one. And then I think a true freshman that looks to be rounding into form is Brianna Utecht. She's probably on paper our third multi behind Destiny and Maria Romero. But look for her. This is her first. She's a true freshman, so this is her first championship experience. But you can just see in practice that things are coming together. We put her on a 4x4 leg, and she ran a really fast leg a couple weeks ago. And so whether she's a girl that finishes high this meet, she'll be one to look out for in the coming years that, you know, it'll be fun to watch her develop. And she was a highly, you know, recruited girl, and we were fortunate to get her. And she's one that we hope blossoms and breaks out at this meet this weekend.
On the men's side, Houston has dominated the American. They've won 6 men's titles in a row indoor. Shockers finished third in 2018, first season in the American, second in 2019, and fifth in 2020. So on the men's side, Adam Moore has been interesting. He set the school record in the mile, 4:01.08. He ranks third in the conference. This sounds like this will be really good conditions for him to perhaps make a serious run at breaking 4 minutes.
Well, maybe. Championship races are a lot different than regular season races. So it could if it goes out at the right pace. But these championship races often are tactical. The prelim will certainly be tactical. Those guys will be running as easy as they can to get through to the final. So it'll be a matter of, is there someone in the final that decides to take it out in two flat in the 800, through 800? And you just don't know because there's no rabbits in the final. It's like, if you ever watch the Olympic Games, sometimes the 1500 meters is a very slow tactical race. Then it's, last lap everybody kicks and it's like crazy. So we hope that it's a fast race and to give Adam a chance to break 4 minutes. But I think that the way he and Coach Hunter look at it is that they had their, he ran his kind of fast races already. And so now this is about competing. And I think he will take winning a championship in the mile over breaking 4 minutes if he had to pick, finishing second and breaking 4 minutes or winning and running 4:10. I think he'd take the victory this weekend because that's what this meet's all about, is about trying to score as many points for the team as you can.
Michael Bryan continues, just had a remarkable career here at Wichita State. He's got the school record in the weight throw. He ranks first in the conference. He's 29th nationally. Tell us a little bit about just his devotion, his work ethic to the weight throw and the hammer.
It's unbelievable. It's very interesting because Mike went to Hutchinson Junior College, was not highly recruited. I'm not sure anyone else recruited him except for Coach Etzendorf at the Division I level. And it took him a while. He was not an instant star. But he is as into throwing the hammer throw, obviously indoor, we're talking about the weight throw right now. But he's as into those events as anyone could be, as into anything. If you walk up to our offices sometime and look at the dry erase boards outside in Coach Rainbolt's office, there are all these drawings of, you know, diagrams and geometry. And it's Mike who has done all this research about the hammer and all the angles and all the different things. That's just, it's like some sort of a NASA scientist experiment written up on the wall. And that's how into the hammer he is. And so obviously the weight throw is the indoor version of the hammer. And Mike is probably better at the outdoor hammer than the indoor weight, just the way he does things. But he did break our school record, his own school record last week. And he had very consistent, I sat there and watched him, very consistent series. And I know talking to Coach Hetzendorf, he just felt like he's not quite thrown his best throw yet. So he could throw at any moment a big, big throw and qualify to the national championships, which would be a heck of an accomplishment, considering he's probably better outdoor in the hammer throw. He made the nationals last year in the hammer throw and made the Olympic trials actually last year too. So yeah, he can talk about the hammer like, you know, anybody would talk about the most complicated science experiment you can imagine. And it's fun. And he films himself doing just about anything. If it's ever a snowy day in Wichita, I think there's a good chance you would walk by the hammer ring and see him outdoor throwing in the snow. Just doesn't matter for him. He's going to get out there and get it done.
Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up, because the heavy snow that we had, not the most recent one, a couple weeks ago when they were closing schools and grocery stores were being raided for bread and milk and eggs, it was early in the morning, 9 o'clock, and he was out there in the snow and the ice, and he was throwing. So he's quite an interesting fellow.
Yeah, he probably actually enjoys that. And when I say enjoys it, like, there's a certain, you know, you get to a certain level where it's like you want as much of a challenge as possible, and he's gonna embrace the difficult weather and that challenge. And this is our last year with Mike, so we're really, you know, just taking it all in, enjoying his performances week in and week out.
Hi, this is Rick Miuma, president of Wichita State University. Check out the latest episode of the Forward Together podcast. Each episode, I sit down with different guests from Shocker Nation to celebrate the vision and mission of Wichita State University. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Was Skylar Arneson, was he the one that did the Highland Games?
Yep.
Do you find that, do the throwers, are they the quirkiest group of track and field athletes?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'd say the throwers are, in a good way, the quirkiest or strangest. The distance runners have their own kind of vibe going on, and then kind of the rest of the team is very similar. But yeah, the throwers, I think that part of it is, it's kind of like the bullpen at a baseball team. Like, they got a lot of idle time. You get done throwing early, you got 6 hours of the track meet, you got to sit around. You know, I think it ends up, they have some of the more interesting conversations and just theories about everything you can imagine.
They always remind me of offensive linemen, because they're overshadowed. They're not the, you know, they're not the sprinters, they're not the mile runners, but they have, a lot of them are, have really interesting hobbies or things to talk about. That's been my observation.
That's a good comparison.
The Shockers finished second in men's cross country. How does that kind of success in the fall, how does that translate now to the indoor meet?
Significant. Our distance runners are running really well. And we've got a kind of a deep group of guys that can all score from the 800 all the way up through the 5K. And one of the things that we'll be trying to figure out is, you know, Tulsa won that cross country championship, and they have, you know, they put most of their focus, scholarship money, you know, into the distance races. And they have guys that are really good in these distance races too. But how will they enter the meet? You know, will they put their guys in two or three events, or will they just focus on one event? You know, things like that. They've been kind of known to focus on more one event. And so if they do that, we're going to fill the gap in a, you know, we're going to move up a lot in some of those areas. And so I think if we end up seeing the entries and Tulsa has a bunch of guys in the 5K and that's it, we're going to score a ton of points in the mile, the 3K, and it'll be, exciting and really help our team. Obviously, we're you mentioned Houston. They're a tough team to beat, especially indoor, the way our roster, you know, we're more of an outdoor team. Yeah, the javelin and things like that, the steeplechase. And so we are hoping, you know, a second place finish would be, we'd be really excited about getting a second place finish. But Cincinnati's really good, so we know they're going to be a tough team to beat. And Tulsa's much better. So depending on how they enter the meet, they have some firepower.
And Tulsa is one of those programs. They're largely distance only.
Yeah, they have a little – they're trying to expand a little bit, but, yeah, mostly distance. But, you know, they've got so many good distance runners. If they load it up, they can score a lot of points. And probably not enough to challenge for second, but we're certainly aware of them. And I think Cincinnati will probably be the team we're battling with to try to at least be in the top two.
Possible surprise secret weapon types for the men's side?
Possible surprises. You know, our multis, I don't know, it's not a surprise, but we think we'll score a lot of points in the multi. Tanner Brown is a guy who is, I think he's ranked first in the conference in the multi. He's also ranked high in the 60-meter dash. He's ranked pretty high in the high jump. He's a guy that's been often injured and not been able to compete at these championships. So I believe this is going to be his first conference championship. So we're looking for him to have a big meet. But we have some other multi guys in there too that can do multiple things. And you know, we feel good about the multi. Can they score in multiple other events? That'll be the key. It's always a difficult thing. But we've got a lot of depth. I think there's, you know, guys that have had meet seasons where they're right on the edge of scoring and, you know, are looking to do well. Joseph Holthusen is a guy who was All-American last year, but he's been injured a lot this year, but he's always competed well at the championship meet. So we're looking for a guy like him to rise to the occasion. We had, besides Mike broke the school record, we had another thrower, Daytrell Gordon, throw a PR in the shot put this week. And there's events like that that if you catch it at the right time, then, you know, you could end up being a guy ranked eighth and finish top three and make the difference in us being second or third. Dowdy Elazarig is a jumper, both long and triple. It could score really high in both events if he does well. So, you know, we have a probably a little deeper men's team than on the women's team and a little more experienced men's team than on the women's team. So we expect that our men are going to compete really well. They're excited for the challenge. They, you know, love competing against Houston. You know, we know that outdoor we're so much better, so that if we can challenge indoor to be somewhat close to them, we know outdoor we're just going to gain so many points that, and we've been so close to them outdoor the last couple times that our guys are just, you know, chomping at the bit to get over the hump.
Tanner Brown is indeed first in the conference in the heptathlon, 5,392 points. You also have Hudson Bailey, Colby Castor, Jack Mull, Nathan Van, Davis, is it Dubert?
Yeah.
All ranked pretty highly in the conference standings. So nobody is sure exactly what the makeup of the American will look like going forward. You have the schools, Cincinnati, Houston, UCF, that are moving to the Big 12 at some point, and then six new ones coming in. And that poses some problems for track that seem to be unique. I guess there are probably other sports at Wichita State that would say they, you know, really matters a lot. But it's kind of interesting for the track and field program. How do you guys think about the potential change in conference membership, whether that's this year or 2 years or more down the line?
I think that it affects us differently than almost every other sport, because if you're a baseball team or a basketball team or softball, volleyball, you're basically trying to build a team to win a game. And so you're trying to, you know, have a strategy, offensive strategy, defensive strategy to win a game against an opponent. In track, you're obviously trying to get better. Everybody's trying to get better. But the difference is that when you have more teams come in and the strengths of the events change, that it, in recruiting, the strategy becomes unique. Because as an example, Houston, if anybody's listening that doesn't know, one of, if not the best sprint group in the entire country on the men's side. Last year at the outdoor championship, they scored seven of the top eight finishes in the 100-meter dash, and we actually had the other one, Jaleel Montgomery, who was a freshman. Well, let's say they left our conference. You take out the top seven guys, and Jaleel Montgomery, who was now barely making the final, is now the first place guy in the conference. He's way more valuable than he was when Houston was in the conference. And that's an example that he's the same kind of an athlete, but his value changes. And all through, there's 21 events in track and field. The values are go up and down depending on who comes in and who leaves the league and what teams are strong at. Some schools focus on distance races. Some schools focus on sprints. Some are like us that might have a balanced team. And so it's really hard to know. We kind of know what the schools coming in have, and we kind of know what the schools in our conference have, but we don't know when those things are going to change, if it's next year or 3 years from now, or will there be a year where there's a mega conference and there's 18 teams in the league or something, you know, crazy. So in terms of recruiting, all we're trying to do is just build the best team we can to be the best balanced team that we can. And hopefully that turns out well in the conference meet, but we could easily, the stars could align and it could be great, or it could go the other way and our team isn't prepared for the type of conference we have for a period of time. So it's really impossible to predict. And so we're recruiting good athletes. We're signing good athletes. Our athletes keep getting better. And, we'll just go to a conference championship, and hopefully our experiences competing at a championship level, you know, indoor and outdoor, the more of those you have, the better you do at that championship. And so if we're a team that's fifth on paper and we want to get in there and get in the top three, if we're a team that's eighth on paper and there's 18 teams, you know, we want to get higher than that. So it's more of a mentality of like, here's who we are. Let's battle the best we can. First is better than second. Second is better than third. Third is better than fourth in your end event and in the team standing. So it makes for difficult trying to figure out as a recruiting coordinator where to put our resources. But generally, we're just trying to get, you know, each athlete to be the best they can and keep signing good athletes. So it's not an easy – that was not a good answer in terms of very clear of what we're doing, because we still aren't quite sure what we're doing in that way. So signing good athletes and just trying to be the best team overall we can and be ready for whatever happens in our league.
So to continue the Houston example then, if Houston's in your conference, it's going to be really difficult to score points in the sprints. So you may say, you know, we want sprinters and we want really good sprinters, but maybe we don't want a whole bunch of really good sprinters, so we're going to put our resources in the javelin or the throws or the hurdles, where we may have more opportunities for success. Is that
correct?
Is that the way you think about it?
Correct. And different than basketball and volleyball, track and field is largely partial scholarships. So that sprinter who was on a smaller scholarship and not able to score very many points when Houston was in the league might be on a bigger scholarship, or we might need to put some resources into guys like that. And then it goes the other way. So that all of a sudden, maybe the decathlon in the American Conference, the decathlon is not very strong. Well, if these other schools come in with a bunch of decathletes, then that changes that the other direction. You know, it becomes a stronger event. So, but it's so hard to predict what teams are going to look like in 3 years from now, or, you know, so the other part of that is COVID. Everybody has this extra eligibility and we're still dealing with that. So there's so many factors that we're trying to juggle at one time to figure out how to build a team. But yeah, it does affect it. And if Central Florida, Cincinnati, and Houston, those are three of the top teams on the women. Central Florida doesn't have a men's team, but Cincinnati and Houston are the top teams on the men's besides us. So we feel like we're going to be one of the top teams no matter what. But we want to do everything we can to make sure we're at the top no matter what happens whenever teams do move.
So you've become pretty well known for Travel with a Wise Guy, your YouTube video series, traveling around a lot of places, but I guess most notably for this audience around Kansas, small towns, ghost towns, Kansas, Oklahoma, up and back into your home territory of Ohio. Give us the update on Travel with a Wise Guy. Start with how can people find it?
It's on YouTube. You just type in Travel with a Wise Guy. I've got, you know, if you're follow me on social media at all. I try to post whenever I post a video. I do one a week. It's been a fun hobby. You know, I'm not married, don't have kids, so that's kind of my baby, I guess, right now, growing it, watching it grow. And it's pretty interesting, the amount of people I've met and the amount of people that are interested in the things I post about. Mostly it's about small towns and rural areas, because that's kind of where I grew up. And it's just been a lot of fun. I have, because of like we're in the middle of track season, I can't take time to film stuff. And so I'll, over Christmas, for example, I did a bunch of filming just driving back and forth to Ohio for Christmas. So I've got videos for months that I'll release because I'm not able to get out and film anything right now. So people often will message me, like I'm going to put a video this week up from Arizona that I filmed last summer, and they'll go, well, how did you go to Arizona this week? And I'm like, well, I didn't go. I went last July, and I had it in, had the videos in my phone for, you know, 8 months. And they go, oh, okay, I thought that this is like every week, this is where you go every week. And I was like, no. So you got to kind of plan if you're going to do it, you know, regularly. But it's been fun. I enjoy doing it. And certainly in the off season, I get a little bit of free time. And so, yeah, it's, I did one of the Kansas Flint Hills recently that people seem to like. And anytime I put something from Kansas up, it's going to get a lot of people to watch. And so that's, it's always fun. Kansas has a lot of small communities, and it's fun learning about the state of Kansas for sure for me. I'm into history, and so I've got some ideas of some ones coming up that I'd like to do this summer, and certainly some Wichita and Kansas-themed ideas.
And you went to a film festival over the summer. Am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah, I got one of my films got nominated and shown in Emporia.
Which one was that?
It was called the No Coast Film Festival, and okay. it was a film festival for short films. 30 minutes or less. And so it was a film that was The Smallest Towns in Kansas.
Okay.
And so that was fun. That was odd, you know, amongst people that are real filmmakers, and I don't consider myself a real filmmaker. I literally have my phone and I have a drone, and that's it. And a selfie stick. And so kind of cracks me up. There's some people, like, they got business cards and they have, you know, studios and things like, and real cameras. And I'm up there like, you know, a goofball with my iPhone. So, but it just goes to show anybody can start making films. And if you get creative and learn how to master a little bit of the editing part of it, that, you know, it can be somewhat successful. I'm still learning all the time and, you know, how to do stuff. And I've gotten help from like Kurt Ryerson at WCTV and different people for ideas of how to do that. So it's been fun. I enjoy doing it. I'll probably keep doing it.
What's been the most popular one?
That video, the Kansas video. I've got a couple of those, one of Oklahoma as well. I'm going to do one of Missouri coming out in a few weeks of The Smallest Towns in Missouri. These small towns, they all have unique stories. It's almost every one of them has a unique story. I've been to towns that have zero people. And like, how does that happen? And some states have laws that you have to vote to disincorporate your town, but if there's no one there to vote, how do you do it? So they have this loophole that they get stuck in that they can't, you know, there's so these towns with zero people now. So I visited some of those. And so I enjoy learning the history of a town, showing up and walking around and looking at the buildings and trying to figure out, you know, what happened.
So if someone were to call up the Travel with a Wise Guy YouTube page, what's the one you would recommend to get started?
If you're from Kansas, probably the top 10 smallest towns in Kansas. If you're from Wichita, like I did one of the Kansas Flint Hills recently, because a lot of people are aware of the Flint Hills. It's just north. So I visited four towns that are in the Flint Hills. And people seem to really are drawn to the Flint Hills. And I am too. I really like it. So those are two of them that I think people would probably enjoy.
People seem to be drawn to Joyland. Do you get a lot of comments on your Joyland video?
I do, actually. That's probably, if you're a Wichita person, there's a Joyland video. Certainly a little older crowd. You know, the younger people don't even know what that is. And so, mostly very, very positive. Very positive comments about that one. And then there was also one about the Wichita State plane crash that a lot of people enjoyed. I hiked up to the plane crash site in Colorado. And so there's a few of them there. If you're from Wichita, that I think you'll like. And, you know, some of those are difficult to make. You want to be very respectful. You want to be understanding of the history of whether it's an amusement park or the plane crash, trying to tell that story appropriately and sensitively. So, yeah, so far I've been mostly positive. There, every once in a while somebody will, you know, not like it, but you can't make everybody happy, I guess.
Joyland's impossible not to like. Did you ever go when it was an operating thing?
When I first moved here in 06, it was like right when they were trying to do it, and it was, you know, failed, I guess. So yeah, I never drove past it and thought, oh, I'll go there someday, and then it was never open again. So yeah, and I never went to the what was the one north Wichita that the Wild West what was that one?
Yes, Wild West World. Wild West, I'm not sure.
I never went to that one
either. That's a small number of people. I think that was open for a month or not much more than that. I have some blue Stay Crisp potato chip tokens that you used to get when I was a youngster, that you would get the tokens and then they were good for admission to Joyland or something like that.
Nice.
So I'll bring those by. You can add those to your collection.
I wish I'd had them on my video. That'd have been a nice little addition.
Yeah, that was a big deal. And the grade cards, you got tickets for, you know, you got A's, you got X amount of tickets, B's, you got a little fewer.
It was certainly, I mean, I've learned that it was certainly a point of pride for the community. And I mean, it, almost in a way, like, it wasn't a major theme park, but people were proud of it. And then when people talk about it now, it's almost exclusively like great memories, whether they're good or bad memories, they're fond of the memories, if that makes sense, you know. So certainly wouldn't want to pick on Joyland. People would be upset if you picked on Joyland that it wasn't like a major park or something like that. Kind of one of those things where, like, you know, you can make fun of it, but if somebody else makes fun of it, you're going to be in trouble. So
right. Well, Joyland certainly had its quirks. The roller coaster, I think, carries the place. I mean, I think that was a legitimate roller coaster. If you were a roller coaster aficionado, you would appreciate the old wooden roller coaster at Joyland.
It's sad because when I went, there was just the wood. It was torn down. It was just sitting on the ground, and, you know, that was sad. But, you know, it's the way things go, you know. But, you know, sometimes you might have a chair from old Henry Levitt Arena and think back about to the days. But obviously you got to move on, and Coke Arena is a beautiful, fantastic place to watch a basketball game now.
Things change. All right. Travel with a Wise Guy. You can check that out on YouTube. John, thank you very much for your time, and have a safe trip to Birmingham, Alabama.
Thank you very much. Go Shocks.
Thank you for listening to the Roundhouse Podcast, courtesy of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. We appreciate your time. We encourage you to rate, review, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, such as on iTunes or Google Play. You can find more Roundhouse content at GoShockers.com. Thank you for listening.
And they let him pass it up court, and then it gets picked off. A long three by Pangos. No good. 1 second. It's over. It is over, and Wichita State has beaten the number one team in the nation to go to the Sweet 16. Go crazy, Wichita. I know you are.